Hey, what's up, you dividend investor, you? And don't you look dapper? My, my, my. Hey, thank you for lending us your ear holes, which we're going to come into for about an hour. Both Tom, the savings captain, and myself, he was so gracious and kind to invite me onto his podcast, The Money Happy Hour, which is linked in the show notes for your listening pleasure. And we had a great conversation, talked about some stocks we like, a little bit of investing psychology. I want you to sit back, not if you're driving, stay focused, but have your mind and your ear holes open because we're going to fill them with some good, sweet information. And as always, I thank you so very much for checking out the podcast. And I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tom, the savings captain.
Thanks for joining the Money Happy Hour, where we make every hour a happy hour for your money. I'm your host, Tom, the savings captain. And of course, I'm joined by my producer, Radish, the hardest working dog in podcasting. Today, we have got a great guest with us, Russ Knopf. Russ, RustyRam78 on X, one of the great accounts and follows on there. Stay tuned. We're going to have a great conversation with Russ. But before we do that, if you're new to Money Happy Hour, welcome. If you're returning, welcome back. And of course, wherever you listen to Money Happy Hour, please hit that subscribe button and leave a 5-star review. We greatly appreciate it. So Russ, welcome to Money Happy Hour, my friend. It is great to have you here. You are not the first, the second guest in the new studio. We've been working on this before we made the big move about a month or so ago. So welcome in. Glad to have you here, my friend. Everything going well your way?
Beautiful, Tom. Well, I'm the man of the hour, I guess, and I'm happy and I like money. So happy to be here. And yeah, nice to be part of the new studio experience, Tom. So thank you again for having me on.
Well, Radish and I are delighted that we finally got this pulled off and together. Well, Russ, I have followed your story on X. You've got great content day in and day out, great perspective on stocks, and a fantastic newsletter, which I will leave all the links in the show notes. But Russ, tell the audience a little bit more about yourself, your investing journey. How did you start investing? It just didn't happen overnight, did it?
It almost did happen overnight. Well, I started investing back through my employer. So you kind of, well, I don't know if you think of that as investing when you don't know exactly where it's going, what it's going into, or how anything works when they sign you up for the 401k. I did that way back in 2003. But again, I just completely ignorant about it. And technically, yes, I was investing, but it wasn't until about 2018 when one day, I don't even remember what the catalyst was for it. I think I heard some stock news or something with stock was going on. And all of a sudden I said, you know what? I think I'm going to learn how to trade stocks. And it'll probably take about a year. And then I'll be able to quit my job because I'll be like a Wall Street kingpin. And I started in penny stocks like a lot of people do because why? Well, one share of Johnson & Johnson was like $100 or I could get, you know, something that's 5 cents a share and just get a whole hell of a lot more shares. Mm-hmm. And that's just a really, really beginner mistake. So if you've made that mistake, don't feel bad. Many people do. But yeah, penny stocks didn't really work out because I started losing sleep because I was buying things that I had no idea what I was buying. Literally just buying either the ticker or the story behind the ticker. And that's all I knew. Nothing fundamental about the business, which is just a fantastic way to light money on fire. So that didn't work. I got tired of lighting money on fire and losing sleep about it. And then I got into swing trading, took some courses on Udemy, which, you know, taught me chart reading. They call it technical analysis. And I don't, you know, you could turn the chart upside down and sometimes you're going to get the same result. So it's pretty much voodoo. It's mumbo jumbo, but anyway, it's kind of, it just, all it does is it shows you what has been happening with the price of a stock or anything that you put on the chart recently. It doesn't tell you the future like we like to believe it does. So continuing on, I got into swing trading, and it was when I was swing trading that I had come across a few positions like Merck, I think, was one of them. United Health was another. And I didn't want to sell. And I was really bad about following rules. So I kind of quickly realized, not a trader. I don't do trading well. But what I do very well is there's a tool called a vice grip, and it kind of clamps onto things and holds them really tight. I found that I do that very well with investing, for the most part, with things that that I end up liking. And yeah, so I learned about dividend investing and became, I guess that became my focus, the passive income aspect. Just holding on to your stocks, you don't have to sell and you still have income coming in. Put probably too much focus on that from the get-go. And I've been evolving, Tom. I've been evolving. We can get into that. So primarily like to say I'm a welder that's passionate about passive income. And that's the very, very abbreviated version, because we don't need to go on for another 45 minutes with me spewing that. So anyway.
No, that's an interesting story. So it's funny, I hear that so often. People start in penny stocks, but your timeline is real interesting, how it maps against the market. In 2018, penny stocks. Okay, that didn't work out. All right, this is pretty good. I think I can follow a process and be a trader. In 2019, you do that. But then 2020 comes. It's amazing that third year, 2020, that didn't completely scare you out of the market. You know, we had COVID come and the world was shutting down. So you weathered through that. And here you are today with a pretty good portfolio strategy. Like you said, you're the vice grip investor.
Hey, nice, trademark that one. But yeah, so the dividend stuff actually started in earnest about late 2018, early 2019. It was just, it was very fuzzy, started coming into focus. One of the things that the story I tell, a lot of that people that have been listening to me for a while know, it was NIO. So in late September of 2018, NIO, the Chinese EV company, everyone was calling it the Tesla of China. So why wouldn't you invest in the Tesla of China? That's all I knew.
Right.
What? The Tesla of China? Sold. I'll buy some shares. That's how... That was the depth, as deep as a parking lot puddle was as far as my research and analysis went. But yeah, it didn't matter that it was never made money. It was completely new, completely in a foreign country. I mean, just the biggest risk ever. But anyway, so I had bought that and it went up a little bit and then started going down. I'd put more money in, it'd go down. I'd put more money in and then I'd start losing sleep because I'm like, why does this keep going down? Put even more money in. And I just got tired of losing sleep. I was waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to look at the pre-market. If you go on StockTwits, it's an app and you can see the early pre-market movement of stocks. And I was there 4 a.m. It was a couple nights in a row and I was so tired at my job. And I just thought, this can't go on. I can't lose sleep if I'm going to do this. And one night I was laying there and I remembered my grandfather who, had a big part in my upbringing, mentioning one time when I was younger about Walmart and AT&T, and he liked investing in those because they paid good dividends. So I grabbed the phone, Googled dividends, and, it's kind of like, Alice meet the rabbit hole. I went down and I've pretty much been down ever since. It just further we went.
So is that where you are today in this, you call it rabbit hole? Do you ever short-term trade anything? Do you ever go back to your roots and try to scalp something? Or
well, as much as I like, yeah, as much as I like the story of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, no, I don't do that. I'm not that mad, but I do sometimes trade. I'll do a little swing trade on option contracts, which is gambling. I don't care what anybody says. When you hear the word options, just know it's a code word for gambling because you're betting on price and time direction. So it has a set date and a set price. And if it doesn't hit that set price on that set date, you lose everything if you don't sell out of it or if anyone won't buy it from you. So sometimes I'll do that, but not very often. If something looks very convincing on the chart, if something's just way been beaten down, like Ulta, ticker ULTA, I almost did that with, but I was too chicken. to put $1,180 down on a 30-day call option, which if this sounds Greek to you, don't worry, just follow. It would have cost me $1,180. 24 hours later, Ulta, because they had had bad earnings, they announced that their revenue was going to be a little bit worse than they expected. Yep. So the market sold off 15% in one day, which is a huge move for such a big, beautiful company. And they do beauty supply too. So pun intended there. But there's a thing called a dead cat bounce. When something drops really far, really fast, chances are in the next 1 to 2 days, it's going to jump up because people are assuming that it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I almost bought the contract. And if I had did 24 hours later, it was about $2,200. So I could have made $1,000 in less than 24 hours. But, you know, I didn't. And those are the kind of things I look at. And it's gambling because then a few days later, trading days later, it came right back down. And it's gambling. It's degenerate gambling is what it is. Don't let anyone fool you.
Yeah. You're the first person I've heard on here come on and say it in those exact terms. And I like it for the reason you said it, for the right reason. Most people just call it gambling. Well, they fall into two camps. Right. But the gambling camp just calls it gambling. Oh, it's a crapshoot. You're going to lose your money. But you said the most important thing, because there's the time element and people don't fully appreciate that. And where is that's the gamble part, right? It's almost like betting on a football game, right? If the game never ended, you know, it wouldn't be a bet. There'd be, you know, I'd win every bet. I would have never lost a bet on a game, right? Well, the same thing happens with an option contract, because there's that time element that you're adding to the price turns it into people. You can lose money in options. There's a whole reason when I were in the brokerage industry, and this is important, folks, if you haven't seen this, I know companies, you know, like SoFi and Robinhood have everything electronic now. But when we were in a real branch office, in wealth management offices, when a customer had an option agreement, we had to give them an option disclosure document, something from it was about a 60-page booklet. So once you sign the agreement, you're writing options. It was all the risks. So folks, I just want to let you know, there's a reason things are regulated, risks are regulated. I don't agree with a lot of regulation, but that I can remember that book. The damn thing hasn't changed in 30 years. It's gray with kind of a maroon cover. It folds up. It's, I guess, 8.5 by 11. It's half of 8.5 by 11, what that is. So I guess 4 inches by 11. It's the same damn booklet that's been out there for 30 something years. I'm sure they've updated the risks. But to Rusty, to your point, if it wasn't risky, why would there be that big of a booklet on it? Only thing I ever sold that had a booklet of risks.
Well, if only they had just came from Vegas, and if they only showed all the risks at the table before you laid your money down, that would be awesome. But
yeah,
you know, and it's in Wall Street, a lot of things, and the Wall Street loves it. They love options because they make money. Wall Street makes money when there's lots of trading. They don't make money when people buy something and never sell it. So if there's money to be made in something, that's the incentive. And that's what a lot of people and a lot of things tied to Wall Street, as I found out, are going to push forward into.
Yeah. All the news and all the news out there that's brokerage related, stock related, and every firm, I mean, they're there to make money. Activity, action. They hate buy and hold guys like me. Hate them.
We're deadbeats.
Yep. We're dead weight. We're dead weight on the books. So you thought about doing an option. You didn't want to take the risk. It sounds like you would be open to doing a trade, but what is your core portfolio looking like these days? What are you wrapping your head around these days? And this is the market overvalued? Is it fairly valued? I'm not asking you to make predictions, but how are you finding valuation dislocation? Where are you finding value today? Where are you putting your dollars?
Yeah. So I want to touch on one thing earlier, how you said I didn't get scared out of 2020. And it was actually very, very simple. So that was my first time as an active you know, in engaged investor going through, because I remember back in 2008, 2009, yeah, I had my money in, but, you know, I was I had two little kids and investing was the furthest thing from my mind. But honestly, now I remember clearly thinking, and it's so cool because years later, I would hear Howard Marks from Oak Tree Capital say the same exact thing, the thought that I had. So I'm like, well, you know, hopefully great minds think alike because I'm on the right track here. But the thought was, and I remember I did it when I bought McDonald's. McDonald's was down to about $140 a share. And I thought, okay, if I buy McDonald's here and the world ends and we can't recover from this and it's the zombie apocalypse, money's probably not going to matter. And being, you know, right, having McDonald's stock that's worth nothing is going to be the worst of my troubles. But if we lick this thing and, you know, a cure comes out or they figure out a way to get around it and we recover, then this too will recover. It's just a matter of time. So it was the simplest thing to think, I know McDonald's is going to come back. Maybe it's down for 2 years or 3 years. We didn't know at the time, but unless COVID was going to kill it, which, by the way, is why Warren Buffett sold when they said the airlines, people chided him for that. But he had a good reason because it could look like a lot of these airlines could go bankrupt. We didn't know what was going on at the time. So as he says, he's the chief risk officer at Berkshire Hathaway. And he just thought that the risk was too great, that he didn't think they were going to get a bailout from right, the government. He didn't know what was going to happen. So he said, you know what, I'm washing my hands of this. We're going to take the loss no matter what happens. And that's the thing. But if you got a business and you know it's going to come back, baby, put your money into it because it's, well, I didn't say that's what I did with mine. But to answer your question, what it's looking like nowadays, there's some core positions. One of my biggest is Nexstar Media Group, ticker NXST. Not a lot of people know that. One of the biggest broadcasters.
Let me see. Are they the, and I've heard you talk about it and it's committed to memory. Are they the CW network by chance?
They do own the CW. They basically got them for $1 for free. They absorbed all the debt from it and 75% ownership because it was split 50-50 with Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount. So, it might have been Comcast. So, put a little asterisk next to that, that Russ says he's pretty sure it was Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount. So then they got whatever 13.5% or 12.5% ownership stake. And then Nexstar got 75%. It's losing money. It was an awful thing. But they wanted to wash their hands of it and just be done. But Nexstar has a really cool plan for the CW. And a lot of people laugh at it, but it had a lot of teen programming, just a lot of scripted, stale, old content. And what they're trying to do is make it into like another version of Fox.
I remember where they have Fox, I guess it was the late 80s when I call it pre-Simpsons Fox, pre-Family Guy Fox. I mean, they were a nothing network. So that's their plan.
So, their plan is to have lightly scripted stuff, reality TV, live sports, things like that. So they're going to have WWE, NXT, which is like the minor leagues for WWE, NASCAR, Xfinity. Again, it's not breaking the, you know, anybody's, excitement here, but it's the minor leagues of Xfinity. They have ACC, college football and basketball, and they're just trying to grow and expand it. And they hired on as the chief operating officer, Mike Beard, who was at Fox for many years. So an industry insider. And, you know, it's funny as I'm talking about this, I'm hearing myself thinking back to when I bought Neo because I heard it was the Tesla of China and that was all I did. But with Nexstar, I spent a lot of time with them trying to understand the business, really understanding what I own. Because as Benjamin Graham used to say, when you buy a stock, you're buying an actual sliver of a business. It's not just a ticker symbol that flitters around on a screen going up and down every day. You're buying an actual business, so you better understand what you're buying. And that's kind of what I tried to do with everything I'm holding now is understanding the business. But yeah, so Nextar Media Group is one of them. I call them their free cash flow machine. And, you know, it's been unpopular. We have a shift going on. So there's some risk there, industry risk with streaming and all that. But, you know, they're pushing into that. They have several growth vectors. I won't go into that and bore people too much. But then again, today I just hit 100 shares of Johnson & Johnson. Again, that's another one people are a little bit iffy on. So uncertainty can give us some great buying opportunities if it works out. But, you know, you kind of have to make some predictions about the direction of the business. And, you know, there's no prediction like your own. I mean, it's again, if you're going to listen to anyone's predictions, it should be yours because everybody's biased. Obviously, we could be wrong. We're all going to make mistakes. But, you know, sometimes predictions tell us more about the predictor than the actual prediction. So anyway, J&J, then I got a couple ETFs, SCHD, started that one a while ago. Mm-hmm. And a newer one because I want a little bit of growth exposure, but I don't want to think about it. I don't, you know, again, to quote Warren and Charlie, God bless them and God rest Charlie's soul, is that they have a two hard pile. And for me, a lot of like the semiconductors and tech stocks, things like that, I don't understand that well. Mm-hmm. So to have it part of an ETF just makes it easier. So I actually started, breaking news, a position into SCHG, which is also a jam from Schwab. Yeah. So the SCHD is dividend growth and SCHD is pretty much growth stock. Yeah. So I'm going to just, you know, maybe start off. I see I got 5 shares. I might get up to 25 or 50 and let that ride for a while and see what that does. So then I got a smattering of other positions and I'm just trying to get down to around 20 individual positions. I used to have over 50.
Wow.
Very hard to keep track of. So those are, I should preface that and I'll break off here in a second because I don't want to talk over you too much, Tom, but I have, we have our 401k. We have money in a lot of places. We have the 401k through my work. That's the bulk of our money for retirement. And then I have a self-directed IRA that in 2020, I started with $30,000. I peeled that off from the 401k to see what I could do with it. So that is my one true return portfolio because it's $30,000. That was, I think, April of 2020 is when I put it in there. Good time to do it
because
everything was still way down. But that one is, I think I've almost made 20 grand on it since then. So that is really awesome. But and then I have a Roth that I started. And then this taxable account. And then we have some high yield savings accounts. We started a Roth for my wife where we just buy VTI because I want to see if she'll outperform me. Mm-hmm. But just VTI every week.
That's so good.
What do you got? You got any questions there, Tom? Because I'll just keep going. I'm like, Energizer Bunny?
No, man.
You just wind them up and let them go.
This is good. You make it. I mean, This is awesome. This is good. So what you're characterizing, it's just great. You're in your early 40s, right?
Middle-aged man, I think they call them nowadays. Yeah. God, that freaks me out.
Let's talk. My main question is, I see this debated all the time. People that invest for dividends and people that invest for dividend growth or growth. What are you, one or the other? Or how do you think through that maze?
I'm evolving like all things and mm-hmm. we should be excited when we evolve, when you have new information enter your noggin and it sets you in a new course or a new direction or shows you what you thought before may not be the best thing. So I'm passive income. I love that passive income bent to what I'm investing in, but I used to be just dividends. And I got burnt on some yield. And I think this is kind of a process that a lot of us go through when we invest. You see those dividend yields, the high yields, and you think, mm-hmm. like, why would I invest in a Costco when it's, you know, 0.85% when I could invest in AT&T or something else that has a 6, 7, 10% yield? And that's called chasing yield, everybody. One of the things we like to say around here is you learn to not chase yield, but chase profits. So once I started doing that, I started looking more into, free cash flow. I love the free cash flow. That's ultimately what the dividends paid out of. And if you have good free cash flow that can easily cover the dividend and the free cash flow is growing, that's like one of the simplest things fundamentally that you can look at with a business. And it's led me to just say, I'm looking for the best total return from these stocks that have these businesses that also happen to pay a dividend. And it kind of burns me up, Tom, because I feel like I missed the boat on Visa, Costco, MasterCard. Mm-hmm. I look at some of these other, NVIDIA was one that I remember looking at, hearing about them. And yeah, I saw these low yields and I said, why would I put money into Costco or Visa? Like, look at those yields, tiny, not for me. And a couple years later, I'm like, you son of a gun. Why the hell didn't you invest in that? Well, I didn't know any better. And if you don't know any better, you can't beat yourself up too much. So I'm at least thankful that at least now I recognize, and I'm waiting for these pullbacks on Costco and Visa too that I'd love to own outright. And I'm just being stubborn. I think they're overvalued. To ask your answer your other question about if I think things are overvalued, yes, I really do. And I'll kind of wrap that thought up with saying, some people want to just buy wherever anything's at, but you got to be careful because Cisco, ticker CSCO, was a very, very big name. It was the NVIDIA back in the dot-com bubble, and people just were buying it like crazy, pushed it up to stupid valuations, and I believe it still hasn't gotten back to where it was pre the dot-com crash. So valuation does matter. If you bought Cisco way up there, you still haven't gotten back, even though it's a good business, right? It's a good business, but valuation really, really does matter where you're buying something at. So yeah, I would say I'm just a passive income investor. I've got that,
so
that
you itch. Have.
Yes.
So it sounds like you've learned or changed or grown in the sense that you're not looking for the 5% plus yielders. That's not the ticket to entry in your portfolio. You're looking for the whole growth story with it, almost regardless of yield. But right now it's kind of hard to find those values, isn't it?
Right. It is. And you are correct because Tom, I did a video, a live stream where I pulled Costco and Visa and compared them again. The other one I was looking at was Casey's General Stores.
And this is,
This is kind of what started it. I was running, looking through some potential investments. I love to do that. And I came across Casey's, and I think it had like a 0.55 or somewhere around 0.5% yield. And initially, my initial gut reaction was like too low. And I was like, well, let's wait a minute. Let's look into the business. And I like what I see. And then the thing to look at is the dividend growth. Can they consistently just hit you every year with 8%, 15%? Costco, by the way, actually news, April 10th, Costco raised their dividend 14%, which is their 20th straight year of increasing their payouts. But had you, and I went back 10 years, and on Seeking Alpha, you can put in a ticker for free. You don't even have to have a membership. You can put in a ticker, click on the dividend tab, click on dividend yield. And if you go down to the second graphic, it's a little interactive chart. You can put in your time frame, go back 10 years, and it'll show you if you bought on this date, what your yield on cost would be.
Right.
So because of dividends, total return, share price appreciation, what you would be getting. And Visa, because I remember that one 10 years ago, was like right now would be almost a 4.25% yield on cost that it would be paying you on that money. So you're getting the bigger dividend because that's accumulated, and your share price appreciation. So I'm less, it's going to take some time, right? It's harder to teach old dogs new tricks, but looking at those starting yields, if it's a solid business, I want to buy the business and be in these great businesses for many years, like a Costco, and it'll all take care of itself. Usually.
There got to be a point when I was investing, Russ, and I've told this story before on the podcast, I resisted dividend stocks until I was at least 30-something, 10 years. We didn't have anything to do with them. Then I bought a couple. I've told the story before, Coca-Cola and Walmart and Duke Energy. I just bought and held them. Then they grew and grew and grew, reinvested dividends 20-plus years. And now I wouldn't say I only buy dividend stocks. I buy stocks that happen to pay a dividend. I like to look at it that way. Like, to what you're saying, the story's got to be good. The business itself has got to be good. And there's a handful of things I like to answer along the way. I should do a full podcast again just on that topic. It's just how I look at things. We all have to go at our own pace, look at things a little bit different. It works for me. Maybe it helps people out. But you know what? When you said don't chase yield, Radish looked up because she hears me every day when I walk her, Russ. I tell her two things. We always talk on our walks, and I tell her don't chase things. Don't chase squirrels, bikes, cars. And I said, and most of all, Radish, never chase yield. Don't chase yield. So when she listened to that command, don't chase yield, she looked up. She heard you across the room.
Oh my God. Well, I will say, Tom, it sounds to me like you dabbled and you're finding out that passive income is a hell of a drug, man.
It is. No, it is. I mean, we had Killer Monson last. I mean, it just grows and grows over time. And that's, I think that's the hard thing. Don't you think sometimes we shortchange ourselves on time? Like, we don't give it the time it needs. We want it to be faster than it can possibly occur. So we go in trying to juice that yield up, but we actually create the opposite effect, because then we get, an occasional dividend cut, right? Or a business that's just not growing. The share price is going down, and we would have been better off just letting Father Time do its thing in the market. Buying a good company.
You're absolutely right. And I'm looking here right now at a little bit of news, and one that jumps off the page, and it was talked about quite a bit, was Medical Properties Trust, ticker MPW. So I remember talking with people saying, you know, maybe they'll cut the dividend, but even if they cut it from whatever, like 13%, you know, I'm still going to get like a 6-7% yield. It's going to be great. Well, actually, Medical Properties Trust failed to announce their next dividend, which is typically declared in February. So they could potentially suspend the dividend. So right. Imagine now if you get a 100% cut and the share price has fallen, I don't know, 70% since you bought it. So that's why I'm like, you know what, if you're listening, don't do it. You just remember, you're buying the business. And one little thing I actually think about is, and it's tough to say that, but if you think, if the dividend went away for a year or two, would you still hold this? Yep. And it's hard to say that, because if a company's cutting their dividend or eliminating it, usually there's something bad going on. But if there was some strange scenario where the business was still humming right along, firing on all cylinders, they were just like, you know, we're not going to pay the dividend for a couple of years because we're going to reinvest in the business. Would you still hold that stock? And when I look at like my Nexstar, my Johnson & Johnson, and some of these other businesses that I hold, like, yes, I would. But when it's AT&T, no, I would pretty much sell them. That's a stinky one. But
yeah. Those will hold you back. So you brought up a really good name there, Costco. I've got a post coming up. So like you said, Costco raised their dividend by 10%. 14%, a 14% hike in dividend. That's great. So what do we know about Costco? They raised their dividend by 14%. The hot dog is still priced at $1.50. The membership, they haven't raised it in about 4 or 5 years now, I guess. But I got a post coming out. I just have to double. I'm looking at the growth rate of the dividend and at how many years it overtakes the $1.50 hot dog. So they pay $1.16 a share now in dividends. $1.50 is the hot dog combo. I'm thinking in 4 years. I didn't have enough time to fact check the math today, but I think by 28 or 29, you're going to get a bigger dividend for each share of Costco you own than at Costco hot dog combo. But no, seriously, you brought up Costco, great growth story. I mean, how can you not love the business? 92% of people renew their memberships. The membership fees, all cash, drops to the bottom line. You're basically locking in a 92% repeat business customer base just to buy from you at a small margin continually. But it's overvalued now. I own it. And boy, that thing went from low 600 to 780 pretty quickly, and now it's back in the 720s or 730s. Where do you see value in that? What valuation makes sense to you?
Well, I think if we look at its, I think the if we go by its 5-year average PE, which, you know, that doesn't tell the story for everything. There's no hard and fast rule with any of this because there's just trillions of possibilities that can influence trillions of outcomes. But if we were to do that, I think somewhere in the vicinity of $575 to $600 is about right. So if it's in there, then I would start buying outright. Now, I'm fortunate that, you know, because of mutual funds that I have, that I've owned Costco, I've been a partial owner, but I've not owned it outright. And I mean, things, it has so much money coming in that last December, they paid that $15. Well, they declared it. They paid it in January, the $15 special dividend. And yeah, speaking of the members, I saw that they grew last year, 5 million more members to over 73 million members. And they grow that dividend fast. And this is one of the things I would have loved to tell my younger self, is that their 10-year CAGR, their dividend compound annual growth rate, is 13%, which is just blowing away inflation. So yeah, just year after year after year, you keep compounding that on itself, then that's low starting yield. Really, it starts to look a bit different.
So my Costco story, I've told this one before. I was going to buy it at 150. Oh, and it was expensive. Nosebleed. I said, I'm going to wait for a $1.30. Never happened. And I eventually bought it at 330, and I have never bought it lower. Every time I've bought more, it's always been at a higher price. But I think I stopped. I'd have to go. I think I tapped the brakes around 612. I think I haven't bought any more since then. But Hey, one stop.
I got one for you. Hold on. I want to wrap this thought up in a nice, pretty little bow about the yield on cost, because I just pulled it up. So if you were to have bought Costco on April 14th, 2014, your yield on cost right now would be 4.61%. So you're pushing 5% dividend yield on the price you paid back in 2014. So that just goes to show you, because way back then, their dividend yield was about 1.25%. So smaller than it is now, but still, it just goes to show you how it can grow and compound on itself. So again, but it's all driven by a good, solid business. It's all the business. So you have to find these good businesses. That's where it all starts.
Oh, I totally agree. So one business that I have, a good business I have found and never invested in, is McDonald's. You mentioned it earlier. Do you still, the end of time didn't happen a few years ago. Do you still own McDonald's?
I still own my 10 shares of McDonald's. I wish I would have bought more, and I keep waiting for it to come down. I think my cost basis is, I think, $193 on 10 shares, and it's just been sitting there. I've thought about selling it. You know, I haven't been adding, but it's one of those where I'm just comfortable. I'm like, you know what? I got my 10 little shares. Maybe if we have a flash crash, something crazy happens, I'll add them. I'll add to them. But as for now, they're just hanging out. I'm up. They're paying growing dividends. The dividend keeps growing. They raised the dividend 9.9% last October, so almost a 10% raise. And for them, they have a 20-year compound annual growth rate of 15%. So, and they're almost a dividend king, meaning that you raise the dividend for 50 consecutive years. So just a good business.
One day I am going to own that king, and that king might be coming pretty soon. That is on my next, probably that's on my watch list next to buy. It has been for the better part of a year. I've watched it come down, come into the 260s a couple times, go up to 300. It feels like it's away from me back in. I might, if the market goes risk off again for a few weeks and, you know, everything gets thrown out, definitely going in on that one. But we might put that in the Radish portfolio to start.
Ooh. I mean, you're getting me excited about risk off for a couple of weeks, Tom. My God, that's, but you know, part of my problem is I spend it all too quick. I went too fast. And I think that's kind of, you have patience too, but nowadays it feels like a rubber band. The market goes down and it feels like for a little bit, and then it's just right back up and you missed your opportunity. So you got to have that conviction and the courage and the liquid capital to be able to buy when it, you know, when it's at the bottom. But again, we can't time it. So that's why you have to make your peace when you buy. And if it goes down and the business is still fundamentally stable and sound, then perfect time to buy more even.
So here's a couple names for you. I want to talk these names with you. And thanks, man. I've really felt like talking stocks today. You're a good partner just to sit around at the happy hour and talk a few stocks. Two classic names, Starbucks and Hershey's. One I've owned for basically ever. One I just bought within the last 12 months, and that's Hershey. What do you think of those names? Do you do anything with them, or do you fancy those names at all?
Yeah, so I don't drink Starbucks, but I do own the business, and I don't really understand it. I mean, I understand it. It's about going there, being seen with the Starbucks cup. But hey, you know, it's funny. My father-in-law tells me how, you know, Starbucks is terrible mud water. It's not good coffee. And yeah, he loves his type of coffee. And I was like, you know, I don't even care. All I keep seeing is millions and millions of people around the world go to Starbucks every day, and they keep going to Starbucks. So as long as that continues, hey, I'm happy, you know. And I always joke with him, I'm like, you don't drink it, I don't drink it, it doesn't matter to me. Millions of people do every single day. And that's I do own it. Picked up a few. It's been in a really steep downtrend, though. I mean, what do you think? For my opinion, I think it's a lot of China risk because they're really trying to expand big into China. And the labor union, you know, with the unions, I think those are two headwinds that are holding it down.
It is. So I think that's one of the few. I've been buying it again lately. I've owned it for over a decade. And I always buy it when I call it hits these air pockets. And this is the third or fourth time it's done it. So started buying it here in the 87, 85-ish range. Although I think it might see 77 or 79 on this leg down. You know, once the knife starts falling, it might fall for a little bit. It might bend a little bit. But I don't care. I'm just adding more to the stack. But there's a few things. Here's what I really like about it. One, the China piece, really interesting story. There's a lot of celebration around Costco's growth. Where? In China. But yet, you know, but Starbucks is, I know they get competitors from a couple of, I think it's Luckin Coffee, a couple of other discount Chinese coffee places. So there is a little bit of that headwind. But a few facts with Starbucks that really, there was a good Morningstar report I read just recently on it. They operate with about a 16% margin, profit margin. They are well underway on $1 billion cost-cutting initiative with their suppliers. So one, I walked away with, I'd hate to be a supplier to Starbucks right now because they are wringing costs out. But that's going to add 3 to 4 percentage points in margin with everything else holding up equal. And then another big thing I liked about Starbucks, the price to sales ratio, what you're paying for that level of sales, and the margin figure I gave you, which not as high as like a Chipotle, which operates in a 25% margin, which you're getting is a price to sales of about 2.9 with other names like McDonald's. You ever hear of them? Yum Brands, Chipotle, Domino's, they're all 5 to 8 times sales. So, you know, I sprinkle it in from a value standpoint in my business. That's, I think I find that name pretty interesting here. Along with Hershey, you know, I think Hershey just...
One last thing I want to touch on. You just reminded me, you jogged something in this aged mind that I have is that, so right now Starbucks has a dividend yield of 2.65. And its 5-year average is 2.02. So that's 31% above its 5-year average. And the beautiful thing that you'll find if you're a newer investor with dividend stocks is that when it gets beaten down, and Starbucks right now today hit a 52-week low at $85.90. But as these blue chip stocks or a stock like Starbucks, the further it goes down, the higher the dividend yield will go. So it reaches a point where if Starbucks is at, you know, $70, like you said, or $60 a share, and that yield is up close to 3%, people are, a lot of investors at that point will just say, okay, this is too good of an opportunity. People start flooding in, buy, 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 buy. And what does that do? That brings up the price. The yield will then start going down. So it's kind of like a built-in buffer for a lot of good. Now, it's probably not going to happen with MPW, but with a Starbucks, something like that, with a Hershey's, when you see a McDonald's, when they all start dropping, or a J&J, they're only going to go down so far before people are like, okay, this is just way too mispriced, and Unless the business is fundamentally faltering, then it's just a great time to come in and buy. And that will naturally kind of buoy it and start bringing the share price back up. So fantastic with Starbucks too. What you got going on with Hershey's?
No, have you looked at that one at all? Hershey's, I don't put you on the spot. What do you?
Yeah, I have. I've thought about buying it. It's a really solid company. The cocoa prices are mostly, I think, what's hurting it. I think the Ozempic thing has really kind of gotten past, like the Wegovy, the weight loss drugs that people were taking. You know, they always say don't bet against the American diet because you're gonna lose. You know, it's just. Hey, whatever we are, you can't bet against the eating habits of us right. Americans. But Hershey's it's entrenched. I know Mr. Beast. That was kind of there was a short report put out about how you know Mr. Beast is going to take down Hershey and he wants to take them down. You know, it's funny. We were just in Vegas and we were at I don't remember what store, but we were at Target. We were at Target on the Vegas Strip, and by the checkout lane there was a big, you know, four-tier shelf of candy. Hershey was top to bottom, different products, stuff on the, you know, the packs that were hanging. Mr. Beast had one box of candy, and I just told my kids, I'm like, hey, he wants to take them down. And my kids are like, I don't even like Mr. Beast's chocolate. I was like, well, you know, he thinks he's Willy Wonka, right? But just from that visual, I should have took a picture now I think of it. But I was like, I told him, I'm like, well, Mr. Beast has a long way to go. So he may do it. We don't know. But yeah, I think that's a minimal risk. But Hershey is just... I mean, their numbers are good all around. I mean, we don't have to bore everybody with the numbers, but I think they're a solid business. And obviously, cocoa is at, a 30-year high or something like that. It's just, I mean, you think it's like, you know, the commodity, if you look at it at a chart, it's gone vertical like it's an AI stock.
It's outperformed Bitcoin. That's what I tell the Bitcoin bros when they start giving me a hard time. It's like, yeah, invest in cocoa or enjoy being poor, you know. I throw that back at him. I read a really good piece on cocoa prices. Maybe it was yesterday. I'm feeling a little bit better. Like there could be, you know, it reminded me two things. One, cocoa is trading. It's more valuable than copper right now. Can you believe that? Mm. On a ton basis, $3,000 a ton or $10,000 a ton rather. So that was one thing. And the other thing, the reminder was cocoa is just a commodity. Commodities do this. They go parabolic, way overvalued. Natural gas, remember that 2 years ago? We weren't going to be able to heat our homes. I think my natural gas company, but next year, if this keeps up, they're gonna send me checks instead of me paying a bill. A commodity, it's going to correct. And, you know, I was reading into the technical aspect. There might be some relief down the road within the year on cocoa prices. So maybe those margins, we'll see what Hershey has to say. They report, I should know the day off the top of my head, but very soon we're going to get some news from them.
Yeah. And that's one of the things too, is to think about as an investor, you have to take so many things into consideration. And one of them that some investors, if a business is really heavily tied to a commodity and the commodity does well, the business does well. But if the commodity does poorly, the business does poorly. So that's something that's outside of management's control. And it's a commodity risk with some of these businesses. Now, Hershey, I think, has just kind of gotten pinched a little bit because we've been in that shrinkflation when everybody's talking right. about how they're raising prices, trying to recoup for inflation. And now they get hit like with another just a boom, boom, bang, bang headwinds. And they got the commodity of cocoa has gone way up. So they're having to pay more for the chocolate that they're buying, but they can't just roll that right into even higher prices when it's been so public. So I think that's why a lot of people are like, well, what are they going to do? How is this going to? So there's uncertainty, and the stock market hates uncertainty. But again, uncertainty can be some of the best buying opportunities. So yeah, like you said, they're facing a little bit of headwinds right now, but long term, I don't know, Tom. I can't see an America without Hershey's. It just doesn't register in my mind.
So is Vegas still standing? Are they going to make it? What's going on in Vegas? Are they busy? Is the town? Are they making money?
They were busy. Yeah, they were busy. Like I pointed out to my kids, I'm like, you see all these buildings and the glittering lights? And we went into the Fontainebleau, brand new casino and hotel. And I said, yeah, Vegas wasn't built on winners. So Vegas is built on losers. The house always has the odds and they want to keep you playing. That's why everything's so fancy. They do everything they can. And I told them, I left out the gentleman club part, but in my experiences in life, gentlemen clubs and casinos are designed from the moment you set foot in the property to extract as much money out of your bank account before you leave as they possibly can. That's what they're designed to do. Like some stocks, like Ares Capital or Main Street Capital, are built to pay high yields. Those places are built to pretty much separate you from your money. Yeah, you'll have somewhat of a good time, maybe some regrets, but
make you feel good about it, right?
At least in the moment, you know, like Charlie Munger was always fond of saying, you know, all the sins have some upside except for envy. Don't do envy because it's the only sin that doesn't feel good while you're doing it and after. But yeah, and gluttony, tie that into Hershey, right? There's some upside to gluttony while it's going on. But yeah, Vegas is fine. It's there. And you know, we didn't gamble. I gambled a little. I told my kids, all right, I gotta gamble because I'm in Vegas. So $5 into video poker, turned that into $5 more. So I walked away with a 100% gain in Vegas, but dude, I was $5. That's all I was willing to risk. You know, just I'm just not a gambler, thankfully.
I'm not either. My daughter was about, I would say 10, 12, give or take. And we went to Vegas. Same thing. You know, she couldn't go over to, she could watch distance and I don't gamble. And I was trying to demonstrate to her. I said, look, this is ridiculous. You want to see Dad throw money away? We were getting ready to leave. I threw a couple dollars down in a slot machine. Don't you know? I won $100. I was like, well, you weren't supposed to see that. That was a bad example. But what I want you to see is look at the lady that was next to me. She looked like she had been suffering on that machine all night long. And of course I walk away and my Jackie Gleason voice after I win $100, like, I don't even know why they call this gambling. And she just looked annoyed that I'd laid down a buck or two and walked out with $100. But yeah, to the point.
We were lucky. Lady Luck was smiling on us tonight.
So dude, it's more about money. It's more about it's living in life and stuff. So Radish is curious.
Mm-hmm.
That guitar behind you in your office, what does it symbolize? What is, are you a music man too?
Oh yeah. I play guitar. I was just in Vegas and you know, I think I tweeted this out. I said, anybody who knows anything about, do you know anything about guitars, Tom? I mean, like brands, man, you know, things like that.
Not really.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously you know what a guitar is, but no, it's, so there's a famous guitar called a Gibson by, you know, the Les Paul.
I know that.
Les Paul Gibson. Yeah. It's the big famous one, but Gibson also owns another brand called Epiphone, which is about a 50% discount brand to, it looks similar. Doesn't sound the same. And it's the discount model. So this is a discount. This is an Epiphone Gibson. And I'm sorry, it's an Epiphone Les Paul.
Les Paul.
So it's that's why I have it. You can't, it's conspicuous. You know, the headstock is out of screen. So you can't see the manufacturer of it. But guitar players know. And, you know, maybe someday I'll get one. But yeah.
What do you play? Do you play what type of music? Let me guess. I'm going to guess. You play some punk, don't you?
I do. Absolutely do. So yeah, punk rock, heavy metal, you know, it's kind of, although I do, Tom, have a very vast knowledge of 80s pop music because my mom and I are 20 years apart. So when I was 5, 6, my mom was 25, 26. And what do young 20s somethings listen to? Pop music. So in the 1980s, that's about all I heard. And it wasn't until I was in high school that I found like metal and punk and things like that. But yes, so punk is my bread and butter, my favorite.
Man, that is awesome. Russ, man, it has been great catching up with you. Thanks for stopping by. Is there any words of wisdom you want to share before we go?
Oh my God, there's always words of wisdom. I'll tell you one. I'll pull one from the depths of my Berkshire knowledge is, We were talking about inflation, and the best, the very best protection against inflation is your own personal earning power, meaning your skills. The skills that you develop, the skills that you have, can never be inflated away or taken away from you. If we start paying people in seashells because the dollar collapsed, and you're the best heart surgeon or something to that effect, maybe the best violinist, whatever it is, you're going to get more seashells than somebody that's main ability is sweeping up, you know? So invest in yourself. Your skills are the best protection against inflation, I think.
Very wise. Well, that's great. Well, Russ, thanks for stopping by. And folks, thanks for listening. And as always, here on the Money Happy Hour, we keep every hour a happy hour for your money.